From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
A rally for more charter school funding draws hundreds to Florida's capital.
And we want the best education for our kids. Now, we've got to make sure we fund it fairly. It takes capital. It takes new buildings. It takes refurbishing classrooms. Now, we've got to be fair in how we allocate those dollars.
Opponents of a wage theft bill say the issue should be left up to local governments, not state courts.
If you haven't been paid your last paycheck, you can't pay your rent. You can't buy food for your children. You're certainly not in a position to pay filing fees and go to the court and wait an extended amount of time.
A House panel approves tougher penalties for drunk drivers. And as many look forward to the Daytona 500 next weekend, some lawmakers say auto racing should become the state's official sport. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Florida's charter schools are looking for some extra money this year, and they've set their sights on traditional public schools to get it. Lynn Hatter reports the charter groups held a rally in Tallahassee today to urge the legislature to pass bills that would give them both enrollment and financial boosts.
The list of demands from the state's charter school industry is very specific.
Encourage the regular traditional districts to implement the high-performing law that was passed last year and the virtual law that was passed last year in the way it was designed to be passed. Because there have been a lot of denials for expansion of virtual and high-performing, and we want to be sure that those that legislation passed last year is implemented and that the new legislation for equitable funding is passed.
Last year, the legislature passed bills creating high-performing charter schools, which allow them to add grade levels and open up additional schools. It also passed a bill that expanded the state's virtual school option down to elementary grades. But Sherry Shannon with the Florida Charter School Alliance says her group's top priority is securing more funding.
I mean, they are all public school children and should be funded at the same level as district children and all deserve the same kind of support for the state of Florida.
The Alliance is backing a proposal making its way through the Senate that calls on public school districts to share some of its school maintenance and construction money with charter schools. Last week, a House Education Committee tried and failed to attach similar language onto a charter bill working its way through the chamber. The proposal to split those tax dollars has been met with resistance from school districts.
I happen to have been around several years ago when the first charter school bill was passed. In fact, I was representing one of the first charter schools that was awarded a charter.
Longtime lobbyist Joy Frank now represents the Florida Association of District School Superintendents, and she says the charter schools' demands are backtracking on their original promise not to ask for any construction money.
And at that time, there were several promises that were made when the bill was passed. One, that those who provided charter schools could do it for less expensive than the public school setting, and also they would not come and ask for capital outlay.
Frank made those comments before the Senate panel discussing the property tax revenue sharing bill. Today, charter schools receive an equal amount of money per student as traditional schools do. And for the last 2 years, they've received the bulk of school maintenance and construction money allocated by the legislature. Governor Rick Scott says he likes the Senate proposal.
It makes all the sense in the world that we have choice for our parents, that they can choose the best schools for their children. I mean, all of us that have children, we want the best education for our kids. Now, we've got to make sure we fund it fairly. We've got to make sure that it takes capital, it takes new buildings, it takes refurbishing classrooms. Now, we've got to be fair in how we allocate those dollars.
The fight over funding comes as state support for public school capital projects has dwindled to almost nothing. It's been nearly 2 years since public schools received any school construction money. Under budget proposals in the House and Senate, charter schools would get $55 million for capital projects in the upcoming fiscal year. A recent study done by a state spending watch group, Florida Tax Watch, says charter schools receive about 30% less money than traditional public schools do. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Making its way out of a House panel today is a bill that would prevent local governments from creating their own rules to crack down on wage theft. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the move came with heavy opposition from members of the public who say it would mean the end of a wage theft protection program in Miami.
Wage theft can be anything from an employer paying an employee below the state or federal minimum wage to an employee not receiving a final paycheck at the end of their employment.
My son works for a restaurant in Plantation, Florida, and he worked for a year and a half. His wages were stolen for 1 week's vacation based on the merit of his manager didn't check off a box.
About 2 years ago, Miami-Dade County enacted an ordinance regulating wage theft, essentially creating the Miami-Dade Wage Theft Protection Program that could help people like Glenda Linton's son. However, it's been a matter of contention among opponents like John Rogers with the Florida Retail Federation. The group is involved in an ongoing lawsuit claiming the ordinance is unconstitutional.
The Florida Constitution says no municipality can establish a court or a tribunal. This thing in Dade County operates just like a court. It uses the rules of civil procedure, subpoena power, treble damages. It has all the accoutrements of a court, just doesn't call itself a court.
It was the Florida Retail Federation that brought the issue to Republican Representative Tom Goodson of Titusville, who filed House Bill 609 that would make employees take complaints to the courts instead of local wage theft protection programs.
A county or a municipality or a political subdivision may not or maintain any effect, any law, ordinance, or rule that creates a requirement or regulations for the purpose of addressing unpaid wages. Any other regulations or ordinances or provisions for the recovery of unpaid wages by the county, city, or political subdivision is prohibited in mine and is preempted by the state.
Meaning the state's only wage theft protection program in Miami-Dade would be eliminated under Goodson's bill. So would a pilot program that just got off the ground in Palm Beach County. Jeanette Smith with South Florida Interfaith Worker Justice helped craft the Miami-Dade ordinance. She says while she agrees that there should be a statewide solution, she says eliminating local wage theft programs will hurt instead of help.
Pilot program in Palm Beach County, a teacher went to that program, was referred to private counsel, was told it would cost $3,000 to get her recovered wages. If you haven't been paid your last paycheck, you can't pay your rent, you can't buy food for your children, you're certainly not in a position to pay filing fees and go to the court and wait an extended amount of time.
Sheila Hopkins, the Associate Director of Florida Catholic Conference, says instead of banning local ordinances and leaving up to state courts, lawmakers should do a study that could look into a statewide solution.
The courts may not be the best solution, especially for small counties. So we're saying let's look at it, see what would be the best. I have a statement here from the Florida bishops that support a study.
But an amendment filed by Democratic Representative Darren Soto of Orlando to do an interim study on the issue was voted down by the largely Republican House Judiciary Committee. Representative John Patrick Julian of North Miami Beach says he wishes the Miami-Dade Wage Theft Protection Program could be saved somehow because it faces elimination under Goodson's bill. Julian referred to the program's success so far in his district.
In January of 2012, there have been a total of 901 cases and $393,213.98 awarded to claimants.
But Republican Representative Michael Weinstein of Orange Park says any argument for local home rule on this issue is null.
Basically, in the 1960s, the state, through the Constitution, decided to do away with local magistrates and create a county court and a circuit court system to deal with all of those issues. And whether the state's doing a good job or bad job, that's basically what's in the Constitution. So I don't see how we can allow any county to go off on its own.
Goodson's bill passed in the House Judiciary Committee along party lines with Democrats opposed. The measure now heads to the House floor. Meanwhile, its Senate companion is stalled in a Senate committee and still has to clear one other committee before it can go to the floor. The Senate bill contains an amendment that would exempt Miami-Dade's wage theft program from facing elimination. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Still to come on Capitol Report, you'll hear of a program that helps low-income people get access to health care services.
We see lots of hypertension. We see coronary artery disease, which is heart disease. We see a lot of peripheral vascular disease.
Getting caught driving under the influence in Florida may soon become more expensive.
Sometimes we have to remind the public that driving is a privilege, not a right. and that if in fact they cannot do so responsibly, we owe it to law-abiding citizens to protect them.
And some lawmakers say, given its history, automobile racing should be named the state's official sport.
Five speed records were broken through 1910. 1928, Sir Malcolm Campbell established a speed record of more than 206 average miles per hour on the Florida beaches.
A move in the legislature to prohibit those receiving food stamps from buying junk food has received a lot of attention. But as Jill Roberts from member station WQCS in Fort Pierce reports, a new study finds that a majority of those receiving such assistance strive to provide their families with healthy meals.
It's busy in the small front office of the Hands Clinic in St. Lucie County. A computer program is giving them problems. The phone is ringing and patients are arriving to check in. And because it's their first anniversary, they're having an open house. HANDS stands for Health Access Network Delivery Systems. It's a free health clinic for those who meet income guidelines and don't have insurance.
We see lots of hypertension. We see coronary artery disease, which is heart disease. We see a lot of peripheral vascular disease, which is can be attributed to a large extent to the smoking. And so we try to deal with the smoking as well.
Dr. James Roberts is the clinic's medical director. He says some of the people come to him after being without medical care for years, and he thinks his efforts have helped save lives.
I think so. In fact, I know we have. Yeah, we have. And I think even that, we have also improved quality of life for a lot of these patients.
The clinic relies on a variety of volunteer health providers, some of them retired, who provide everything from nutritional advice to medical care. And he insists everybody be treated with dignity.
Just because they don't have insurance and just because they don't have the means doesn't mean that we treat them any less than we would if Donald Trump walked into the office.
Patient Ruth Rossello agrees. She pushes her dark hair behind her ears and has a quick smile. She says she's here for tests because she's been sick and has been a patient here for the year the clinic's been open. She thinks the care she's received has always helped her feel better.
That's really, really, I had to thank God because I found this place. They helped me a lot. They've been treating me for so many things.
Before, she relied on advice from friends and medications she could find on store shelves.
I take in a medicine from the over-the-counter. Anything that they tell me, go buy something for the headache or something. And when I came here, I had my blood pressure high, and I never had that. But that was the medicine that was taken.
Rossello and patients like her are guided through the process by people like Jeanette Lopez. She's what's called a patient navigator, and she helps patients with paperwork so they can quickly get care.
So we've had one patient who came in here with an abscess in his mouth, but it looked like it was an emergency that needed to be taken care of. And it turned out, yes, it was an emergency. The man needed surgery. And it was all processed, and we got him through, and now he's happy as can be. He's happy as a lark.
Lopez says she can also help connect patients with agencies that can help them with things such as rent or put them in touch with a food pantry if needed. Some patients come to the clinic to learn to handle their health conditions. Nutritionist Carol Casanova can help with that, especially when it comes to diabetes.
So it's trying to teach them just basic healthy nutrition, how to prepare the food, how to shop for the food, you know, the portion size, how to read a label.
The clinic is located at 3855 South US 1 in Fort Pierce and is available to St. Lucie County residents. Dr. Roberts would love to hear from more doctors who could spend a few hours helping out.
We need more primary care physicians to just give a little bit of time. Yeah, we have some, but not nearly enough. So we're begging physicians to come in and maybe fill a couple of slots for us.
And they'll also soon be expanding to dental care. For Florida Public Radio, this is Jill Roberts in Fort Pierce.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramel Gomes. A House committee today voted to get tougher on drunk drivers. James Call reports with bipartisan support it moved a bill that would give a judge the option of either installing a breathalyzer or disabling the car of a first-time offender for driving under the influence.
Ocala Representative Dennis Baxley wants to give judges more options when dealing with drunk drivers. His bill would expand the use of ignition interlock devices, which required breath testing for alcohol before the vehicle can be started. 26 states have such laws. And Baxley says the blow-to-go devices are a more effective weapon against drunk driving than suspending a driver's license.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The ability of this to actually change the person's behavior, that they cannot mobilize the vehicle if they've been drinking, will change the direction of things. Whereas if they've just been suspended or fined, they may still be driving drunk.
According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, 31% of all traffic fatalities involve people driving under the influence. In 2010, there were more than 2,000 traffic fatalities in Florida. Members of the House Economic Affairs Committee didn't debate Baxley's proposal. Instead, like Boca Raton Representative Stephen Perman, they asked questions about the effectiveness of the ignition interlock devices.
If someone wanted to enter into collusion and allow someone insanely enough to drive drunk, could another passenger in the car actually trigger this device who hadn't been drinking, and it actually would allow the driver to operate the car under the influence?
Representative Baxley.
My understanding of the technology is it can be clearly identified with the driver and is not easily obfuscated.
Current law allows a judge to order an interlock device installed on a first offense if a minor was in the car. Baxley's proposal does away with that requirement. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that ignition interlocks reduce DUI recidivism by 67%. Baxley says the devices give the judge an effective tool without being overly harsh in punishing a convicted driver.
Well, I think it's when they realize a person is remorseful, they intend to change their behavior, they're looking for some accommodation to be able to continue to go to work. And it'll allow the judge to say, we now have this option available. Would you like to choose and agree to this? And then I'm going to put this part of the sentence.
The proposal would allow the judge to either immobilize the vehicle with something like a traffic boot or install an interlocking device for at least 3 months on a first offense, 6 months for a second, and at least a year for the third offense. Democrats like Perman thanked Baxley for bringing the proposal before the legislature.
Sometimes we have to remind the public that driving is a privilege, not a right. And that if, in fact, they cannot do so responsibly, we owe it to law-abiding citizens to protect them.
It is rare for Democrats to support Baxley, who campaigned to define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, supported efforts to curb abortion rights, and sponsored last year's election bill, now being challenged in court. Coconut Creek Representative James Waldman, a Democrat, is usually on the opposite side of Baxley on such social issues, but he complimented Baxley on his DUI bill.
This is the type of legislation we should be passing in Tallahassee. Not a lot of the other stuff we talk about, a lot of those social issues that get people all up in arms. But this is something that's truly going to save lives, and I commend you for bringing it.
A driver ordered to install an interlocking device would have to pay a $70 installation fee and a $67 a month service charge for the device. Baxley's proposal has cleared three committees without a single no vote. It has one more committee stop. The Senate companion has stalled in committee. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
After a panel of lawmakers signed off on the measure this morning, a bill that calls for allowing inspirational messages from students in Florida schools is headed to a final vote in the Florida House. The bill would permit individual school boards to adopt standards for how and when students in public schools could lead these inspirational messages at school events, even mandatory events like student assemblies. The message would have to be initiated and delivered by students, with no involvement by faculty or staff. Republican Representative Matt Gates spoke in favor of the bill.
It seems as though there is a concern from those that are both on the left and to my left that, oh no, there might be students that are confronted with messages that they disagree with. I don't know about anybody else, but when I was in school, I was confronted with messages I disagreed with all the time. That's what makes someone an intellectual thinker. It's what makes somebody be a critical thinker. The notion that the First Amendment would somehow bar a student from being able to share something that was inspirational to them, I think is a very tortured interpretation of the First Amendment.
Democratic Representative Richard Steinberg said the words inspirational messages are simply a euphemism for prayer. Groups like the Anti-Defamation League and ACLU lobbied against the bill, calling it unconstitutional and predicting that any school board adopting such policies will be sued. The bill has already passed in the Senate. Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate meets at 9:45 Thursday morning to consider a number of bills, including a bill allowing corporate sponsorship of greenways and trails, another allowing breastfeeding mothers to get out of jury duty, and a bill that's aimed at making it easier for homeless youths to get their birth certificates. Another bill under consideration of the Senate would allow lottery tickets to be dispensed from vending machines. The bill revises the requirement that the Department of Lottery lease certain vending machines. The Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles will be holding a Survive the Drive news conference that seeks to educate the public about road safety and the steps one could take to ensure that you are properly protected from harm while driving. Celebrate Life Day will take place at the Capitol on Thursday. There'll be displays, a prayer service, and awareness of life issues and bills. The event describes its goal as a celebration of the dignity of all human life. And that's the day book for Thursday, February 23rd.
Finally, Florida lawmakers are driving ahead with a plan to make auto racing the official state sport. Two lawmakers from the Daytona area say it's an historic activity. But Regan McCarthy reports not all lawmakers are ready to give it the green light.
Representative Dorothy Hugel says auto racing got its start in Florida.
It really began in Florida in the years going back all the way back to 1903 when men and women started racing on the beaches in Volusia County. That led eventually to the formation of NASCAR, and we are so fortunate in our state that we have two sanctioned NASCAR tracks.
And Senator Evelyn Lynn, a Republican from Daytona Beach who's sponsoring the measure in the Senate, says the state holds several racing records.
Five speed records were broken through 1910. 1928, Sir Malcolm Campbell established a speed record of more than 206 average miles per hour on the Florida beaches. Henry Flagler's railroad shipped many cars to Florida throughout the early years of auto racing. Florida is the only state with three major international speedways, and more than 50 local tracks exist throughout the state, more every day.
Hugel, a Republican from Port Orange, says the proposal would include all forms of automobile racing.
It includes not only speedway racing, but stock car racing, sports car racing, drag racing, midget car racing, and karting, as well as hill climbs and trials.
Representative Rick Kreisman says he's a fan of racing, but he's not convinced racing is the right choice for a state sport. He points out that with three professional football teams in the state and several national championships earned at the college level, an argument could be made that football should be selected. And he says baseball is also worthy of consideration.
Florida has a long tradition and history with baseball, going back to the Philadelphia Phillies spring training here in Florida in 1889. You've got 15 teams that hold spring training here in Florida. Between the Marlins, the Rays, and spring training, you've got more than almost 5 million people who have come and visited Florida to attend one of those games.
And Kreisman questions Hugel's premise that racing got its start here.
It certainly might have been made famous to some degree here in Florida, but I don't think it was invented.
Others brought up concerns about picking a sport that many of Florida's children wouldn't be able to participate in because of age requirements and the cost of the sport. Though Hugel responds that Floridians of all ages can participate as spectators. And Representative Alan Williams, a Democrat from Tallahassee, points out that the state gets a big chunk of cash from golf. He says he would understand creating a resolution in recognition of racing. But Williams says he thinks the state should cool its jets on announcing symbols.
You're not going to understand when we pick a state song that's part of our history. We pick maybe a state shell, a state bird. But I think we're kind of getting carried away with some of these different state owned items, or whatever you want to call it, or designate different things as part of our state. We have to be very careful with that.
The state already has more than 20 state symbols, including a state song and bird, as well as state tree, beverage, and pie. And another lawmaker is proposing this session that Florida name a state amphibian. The measure to make auto racing the state sport passed a House and Senate committee in its race to become law. In the meantime, there will be plenty of cars crossing the finish line during the Daytona 500 this weekend. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.